6.
A telephone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion, and we're going to return to the psalm that we were considering for the purpose of understanding God's timeline, also for understanding the magnitude of the energy that he calculated was necessary to have the universe develop and life to be conceived, and for that history to play out over the time span of 6 plus 1, which is his formula. And so if you'd like to call us and participate in this discussion, our number is toll-free, 877-300-7645. I couldn't listen to most of the news because listening to the President of the United States lie to people is and to upend the truth is extraordinarily irritating. But the response of the Republicans was extraordinarily laughable. They said that his speech was filled with rhetoric. Well, that's what a speech is. You know, rhetoric is the art of discourse. It is used to either inform, persuade, or to motivate. And so to call a speech full of rhetoric, that's got to be about as lame an insult as one is likely to deploy. What on earth has happened to us? Well, returning to the passage we were considering at the end of yesterday's program, we find that we are transitioning from salvation back to science and then returning to redemption again as the psalmist speaks of the brilliant light, the bridegroom, the upright one in the way. He says that his goings forth is from the uttermost parts of the heaven. His circuit of arrivals, plural, is unto the distant end of time. I shared with you yesterday that Yahweh is constantly represented by his set-apart spirit, but that he makes rather infrequent trips by way of his corporeal manifestation, which is the Masiyah Yahusha. That corporeal manifestation has been here 6 times previously, will return once more. This coming return, the 7th, will be quite different than the others. That's always the nature of Yah's plan. You have 6 things that are alike that lead to the 7th. The 7th being the goal, the thing that is unique among them. And in this particular equation, when Yahweh returns, he is going to dial down his energy considerably less so than he has done in the past. In the past, he dialed down his that amount of energy that he was setting apart from himself to the point that he appeared and sounded like and looked like an ordinary man. Now, that wasn't the entirety of Yahweh, obviously. The entirety of God won't fit into our solar system, much less into a human form, no matter how much Christians might protest. But when he returns, he is going to dial down his energy considerably less. He's going to come back looking like stars, that brilliant. And that is, by the way, what is going to incinerate all of those who are not protected, enveloped by the set-apart spirit's garment of light. But that will be the 7th visit. The other unique thing about this 7th visit of Yahweh to our planet in a corporeal form is that this time he's going to stay here for 1,000 years. Everyone on earth is going to see him simultaneously. It's one of the reasons we know that Paul lied when he claimed to have seen him on the road to Damascus. Yahusha said that when he returns, the entire world will see him at the same time, and that if anybody claims uniquely that they have seen him in the wilderness or going from one place to another, that they are lying. Well, considering this particular statement of his circuit of arrivals, the circuit is 7, unto the distant end of time. Well, his 7th arrival is going to lead to eternity. That is to say, Yahusha is Yahweh in 3 dimensions, God reduced to human form, but not all of God, part of God, set apart from him, being reduced to human form. And while As I shared with you yesterday, I don't expect those of you who are new to this information to concur with this position now, at least based on so little information. But rest assured, if you stay tuned to this program, you will continue to see the evidence mount until this becomes the only universally consistent and plausible explanation. Ultimately, there are few concepts in the whole of Yahweh's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms as repetitive or as essential as the concept of being set apart. It is the set-apart spirit, not the Holy Spirit. But the reason that people don't understand that Yahusha is the Kodesh Kodesh, or the most set-apart, mean that he's not only a part of Yahweh set apart from him, but he is, that part of Yahweh is translated from light or spiritual energy into a physical form, making him the most set apart. That every time that you find the word for set apart, which is Kodesh in the Hebrew language, it is changed to the religious concept of holy, thereby robbing readers of this profound concept. And the reason this is important is because not only is Yahusha the most set apart, Kodesh Kodesh, not only is the spirit the set apart spirit, thereby describing the fact that she is part of Yahweh, set apart from him, and not only does this completely destroy the myth of the Babylonian Trinity that is embraced within Christendom, it also associates the means that we can be set apart unto Yahweh, because we are told that the Shabbat, the time that we embrace the promise of seven, that we come to recognize that it is Yahweh serving us in this way so that he can settle our debts and settle, so that we can settle down with him, that the Shabbat are Kodesh set apart, that Yah's invitations to meet with him and to be called out of this world, to be set apart from this world, are also Kodesh set apart. They set us apart unto God. Everything that is important to God, everything that God respects, that God cares about, is Kodesh, including his covenant, including his children. And so, set apart is a extraordinarily important concept. Now, the root of Kodesh is Kadosh. It is in all cases in Hebrew. It's the verbal form, the action form that defines the noun, the adjectives, and the adverbs. Kadash and Kodesh are spelled identically in the Hebrew text. They're just vocalized differently. Kadash means to be pure, to make or pronounce clean. So to be is to exist, and to make is to create. And to pronounce is to use words to communicate or accomplish something. Each and every connotation serves to reveal essential aspects of Yahweh's nature and our nature should we embrace his covenant. And specifically to cleanse and to purify, restoring us to acceptability in Yahweh's presence, is the primary responsibility of the set-apart spirit and also of the most set-apart, because he was the one that fulfilled matzah. Matzah is where we are cleansed and purified. Now, these concepts serve to confirm that there is only one God. You know, God said, "Hear, O Yisrael, Yahweh is God, Yahweh is one." You know, Yisrael, by the way, means individuals who engage and endure and who are empowered by God. Ish, Sarah, El. So if you think that he's speaking to people that you are not a part of, well, if you're not engaged with and enduring with and empowered by God, then you would be right that Israel has nothing to do with you. Well, these concepts, as I say, all serve to confirm what God says about himself, that his name is Yahweh and that he is one. As a matter of fact, that's the big issue I have with the corruption of Yahusha's name to Jesus. Jesus is wrong. It's misleading. It has no value whatsoever. And it precludes people from knowing Yahusha. Once you know Yahusha, what you come to understand that Yahusha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh saving us. And so there aren't two personas in this alleged Babylonian Trinity. Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. It, the name is a compound of Yahu, which is from Yahweh, and Yasha, the Hebrew word for salvation, to save. And the moment you understand his name, you actually understand who he is, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, fulfilling the Torah's promises of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua. Now, these concepts, as I say, thereby not only affirm that God is one and that his name is Yahweh, but that he is our creator, he is our father, he is our savior. And beyond this, the set-apart spirit not only represents Yahweh's nature, and she represents the maternal aspects of his nature. The set-apart spirit, because she is set apart from Yahweh, and Yahusha, because he is the most set apart, are the same. All you're doing here is you're comparing the difference, if you will, between energy and matter. But there is no difference between energy and matter. All matter is organized energy. And the energy, the light, came from exactly the same source. So the set-apart spirit and Yahusha are comprised of exactly the same material. They came from exactly the same source. They were set apart from Yahweh. The only difference between them is magnitude. That's it. You know, matter as organized energy is a diminished form of energy. Strictly magnitude. The power of them. So these concepts all work together to help you understand God's nature. And how, as the set-apart spirit, the Kodesh spirit, that she is not only set apart from Yahweh, but she's engaged in the process of cleansing and purifying our mortal soul, as also is the Kodesh Kodesh, the most set apart, Yahusha. And he did this through Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, as well as Shavuah. So, when we become like the set-apart spirit, when we become like the post-Bukurim Yahusha, we are free of the constraints of time. We ourselves get to enjoy the nature of energy. We are empowered, being transformed from that which is matter to that which is light. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back with this story in a moment.
Jim Duke.
As we study the nature of what it means to be set apart, we find that God manifests some of his spiritual energy in a corporeal form, entering our physical material world. He did so in two ways. One is that he set apart part of his spiritual nature as the set apart spirit, but also as Yahusha, which is Yahweh engaged in the process of saving us. Masah Yah, by the way, means the work of Yah, the implement doing the work of Yah. So God placed part of himself within our flow of time, just as this song that we are reviewing reveals. Yahweh manifests himself in this way to let us know that he exists, to make himself more evident to us, to announce the way home, to pronounce the truth, and to justify, to facilitate our redemption. However, mortal mankind, like Yahusha, we are stuck in time, and he was temporarily, he is not anymore, and one day we will not be either. During the celebration of Bukurim, Yahusha reclaimed his eternal nature, katsa, in this Hebrew parlance, unto the distant end of space-time. It was a model that we shall follow. I've used this example before. I've done so on this program, but I'm going to do so again because this is one of the things that people really get tripped up on. because the notion of the Babylonian Trinity that's made its way into Christendom is so ingrained in our psyche, and that God is one. He is not three. There is no Trinity. Well, there is one in the Babylonian mystery religions, and so long as you want to ascribe to them, then go ahead and believe in the myth. But God says he is one. The way that he can be one and manifest himself in two different ways, as the set-apart spirit and as the Son, is the same as I'm going to explain right now. Go out in a boat into the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I want you to, in this analogy, I'd like you to envision taking two buckets and dropping both buckets into the ocean. Lift up those buckets and freeze the water in one of them, and then carve that frozen water into the shape, the image of a man. I want you to take the other bucket of water and in your mind's eye add energy to that water, boil it. You'll produce steam. Now, that ice sculpture comprised of the seawater is tangible. It's corporeal. It's material. You can feel it. You can touch it. You can see it. It has a brief existence because all things that are corporeal devolve. The second law of thermodynamics, they devolve. And so it's here for a brief period of time. But there are advantages of the tactile experience of seeing and touching, feeling. The steam, comprised of exactly the same material, same exact material that the sculpture was comprised of, pure seawater, nothing but seawater. But the steam has more energy. It can be put to use to empower. It can't typically be seen, but it can be felt. It is it's a force, however, that can do great work. And so, in this way, you're seeing that both the heated water, the steam, and the ice both return to the ocean from which they came. They were both part of the ocean, set apart from the ocean. They were identical in nature to the ocean. And that is really the best way, I think, that I know of, to understand the set-apart spirit and the most set-apart Yahusha. And therefore, if you are one who wants to worship and idolize the man, why are you doing so? Why are you ignoring the ocean? Why are you fixated on the statuary and ignoring the vast ocean, the foundation from which that statuary came? Why would you do that? If you're fixated on the revelations that you think are being imparted to you by the set-apart spirit, why aren't you identifying that set-apart spirit with Yahweh, the source from which you came? It is our fixation with things that we can touch and see and feel, as opposed to those things that we can know, that I think gets us into trouble. You see, Yah's Torah is actually the best place to see God, to meet with him, to come to know him, to benefit from him. But that's just rhetoric, isn't it? Returning to Shattering Mists, I'm your host, Yada. You can join us today if you would like. Our number, 877-300-7645. We're considering the testimony that Yahweh provided for us to understand creation and his role in it, to calibrate the timeline of creation, and to understand some of the science that is presented in his Torah testimony. The Mizmor, or song, is the 19th. We're on the 6th verse, if you're reading along. So then scientifically, the psalmist was inspired to say something that is rather profound, and it is precisely accurate. He said, no radiant energy, heat or light, chama, will be concealed or cease to exist, shatar, will become unknown, vanish or perish. The second law of thermodynamics confirms this concept, which is directly related to the conservation of energy. While energy can be transformed into mass, and mass can be transformed back into energy, neither can be destroyed, ceasing to exist. Yeah. So God beat Kano, who was the strategist and engineer, enabling the Napoleon war machine, the father of thermodynamics, to this conclusion by 3,400 years. God revealed from the far extremity of the spiritual realm his going forth and his arrivals and departures unto their completion, will be unto their completion, and nothing is hidden from his light. This is the conclusion of Ms. Moore's song, the sixth verse of the 19th chapter. So speaking of no radiant energy will be concealed or cease to exist, and from the far extremity of the spiritual realms, his going forth and his arrivals and departures will be unto their completion, and nothing is hidden from his light. Yahweh's Torah, his instructions, his prescriptions for living, is God's light in our world. If you want to see God's light, read the Torah. If you want to come to know Yahweh, read the Torah. If you'd like to meet the Creator, read the Torah. If you'd like to engage in a relationship with him, read the Torah. It's the only place that relationship is presented. Yes, Scott.
I see a running theme there.
Yeah, so it's the God tells us that there are two things that we ought to do with his Torah. In fact, actually, I should say there are three. And one of them is repeated the most often, which is to shamar Torah. Shamar means to observe. To observe is to closely examine and carefully consider. It's to remain focused on. If you're observing a written document, that would mean that you would do what with it?
Read it.
Oh, there you go. There you go. See? This is not tough stuff. All right. But by the way, if you were to ask a religious Jew what Shamar Torah means, they would say keep it, which means to obey it from their parlance. That's not what Shamar means. You got it right. Gold star for Scott. It means to read it. All right. The second thing that he said regarding his Torah, the second most common instruction regarding his Torah, the word Torah, by the way, means teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction. The second thing was to Shema Torah. Now, Shema means to listen. Now, if you had this document complete with words, letters and words on a page, communicating a message, how would you listen to it?
Say it out loud.
Yeah. There is actually a word for that. It's called recite.
Yeah. Right.
And there is a Hebrew word that conveys both read and recite. It's the basis of the seven meetings that God invites us to meet with him and to be called out of this world. The basis of Mikra and Mikra in the singular is Kara. Kara means to read and recite. Now, what God is telling you through Mikra and Kara, the verb that defines Mikra, which are the seven invitations that God is providing for us to be called out of this world and meet with him, is that if you read and recite, which is what Kara means, that you will discover that you're being invited, which is what Kara means, to meet with God and to be welcomed by him, which is what Kara means. So if you observe, which is you read, and you recite, which is Shema, the Torah, you are going to find that you've been invited to meet with God. All right, so we've got two. We got read and we got recite. Those are the two things that he asked us to do with this Torah. I said there's a third. It's not presented nearly as often, but it is presented maybe 10% of the time that he mentions observe, which is to read the Torah, and to listen, which is to recite the Torah. And that is asha. It means to engage in and act upon the Torah. Now, if you come to read and recite the Torah and you come to know Yahweh through it and understand what he is offering, how do you think you would respond or act upon it?
This one, I'm not coming up with any answers at the moment. Share it, maybe.
Share it. That's a good thing. How about just simply embrace it, accept it?
Yeah.
How about if you find that God is introducing himself to you, how would you respond? Hi, God. Good to know you. Yeah. Hi. Yeah. Good to know you.
Acknowledge.
Glad to know that you have a name. It's Yahweh. Glad to know your name, and it's a pleasure getting to know you. Now, if he offered a means to engage in a relationship with him, how would you respond to that?
You'd probably say hello and welcome it.
Well, you'd act upon those terms and conditions of the relationship once you came to know what they were, right?
For sure. Why wouldn't you?
All right. Yeah. If you read the Torah and you find that God is offering you invitations to meet with him, how would you respond to those invitations?
You would join in them. You'd go to them.
Yeah. You say, all right, this invitation says it's from God to me, and it asks me to meet with God on this specific day for this specific reason, and it prescribes a menu for that day. You think maybe you'd attend the party?
You probably should.
Yeah. So that's all there is to it. Read it. Recite it. Respond to it. Not really complicated. Pretty simple stuff here. Nothing is hidden here. Well, this is what Mizmor 9:7 says. Yahweh's Torah is wholly complete and entirely perfect, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. Yahweh's testimony, his eduth, his eternal witness, is aman, trustworthy and reliable, instructive, informative, verifiable, confirming, supportive, establishing, and dependable. Making understanding and obtaining wisdom, hakam, making education, learning, and enlightenment to the point of comprehension, simple. For the open-minded. Not complicated. So here's God, right in the middle of this psalm. We turn to this psalm for the express purpose of coming to understand God's timeline. And he told us right at the beginning, he says, here's how you calibrate my timeline, and here's how you come to understand the amount of energy that I'm putting into the system. And here, by the way, is some insights on the second law of thermodynamics, which you'll discover in about 35 centuries from now. And then he tells us this about his Torah. Now, I want you to equate this to Pauline doctrine, which says that the Torah is of the flesh, that it enslaves, that it's a cruel taskmaster, that it cannot save anyone. This is God's presentation of his Torah. He says, Yahweh's Torah, by the way, that would mean it's not the Jewish Torah, wouldn't it? Yeah, because Christians say, I don't want to be a slave to that Jewish Torah. Whose Torah is it? Yahweh's Torah. Who's Yahweh? God's one and only name. Yahweh's Torah. Torah means source of teaching and instruction, the place from which direction and guidance flow. It's from the verb yara, which is the source of teaching, guidance, instruction, direction, the place from which those things flow. Is wholly complete and entirely perfect. If it is complete, can there be a New Testament?
Nope. No.
I got that one. You're 3 for 4. If it's entirely perfect, then is it a flawed document that needs to be replaced by a new religious instrument?
No, definitely not.
When Yahweh told Abram to, as the third codicil, the third requirement of participating in the covenant, to walk to me and become tamim. Tamim, I have just translated here for you as wholly complete and entirely perfect. How would you then, if you were trying to engage in and embrace the same condition of the covenant, to walk to God and become tamim, how would you accomplish that now that you have heard Yahweh say, Yahweh's Torah is tamim, is wholly complete and entirely perfect?
You would have to observe it and all that other stuff we just talked about.
If the Torah is filled with guidance on these things, and that guidance is wholly complete and entirely perfect, and God is saying, walk to me and become perfect, don't you think maybe you ought to have the Torah guide your steps?
Definitely. It's a map.
There you go. Yahweh's Torah is wholly complete and entirely perfect. Tamim, which is what God says that he is asking us to do as the third requirement, the third of five requirements to participate in the Torah. Walk to me and become a tamim. Perfect. Yahweh's Torah is wholly complete and entirely perfect. Now, because it is wholly complete and entirely perfect, what does it accomplish? Well, that's the next verb, shub. Shub means to return, to restore, to transform. So what happens when we follow Yah's guidance, which is complete and perfect? We are returned to him. We are restored in terms of our relationship with him. We are transformed, going from failed and flawed material beings to spiritual beings, becoming like light. And what does it that God says, this perfect and complete Torah, this teaching and guidance, what does it return? What does it restore and transform? Is it not the nefesh, our souls? We'll return to this passage when Shattering Myths returns in a moment. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. All we're doing today is considering Yahweh's testimony. This particular passage in the midst of the 19th Mizmor, which is a song in Hebrew, is one of my favorites, not just in the Psalms. It's one of my favorites in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Let me share it with you again, and we'll consider its implications. It begins, Yahweh's Torah, his source of teaching and instruction, Yahweh's place from which direction and guidance flow, is wholly complete and entirely perfect. Tamim, without defect, lacking nothing, totally correct, sound, genuine, right, helpful, healing, beneficial and true. Returning, restoring, and transforming, shuba, turning around, bringing back, changing and renewing. The soul, nefesh. Yahweh's testimony, his eduth, his witness. Eduth is restoring witness and eternal testimony. So Yahweh's eternal testimony and restoring witness is trustworthy and reliable. Aman. It's instructive. It's informative. It's verifiable, it's confirming, it's supportive, it's establishing, and it's dependable. Making understanding simple for the open-minded. Hakam pithe. Making education, learning, enlightenment to the point of comprehension easy for those who are receptive. Powerful. I mean, I shouldn't need to explain it, but I'm compelled to point out these highlights. For all of those Christian apologists out there that when someone begins to speak of the Torah and they immediately gravitate to Paul's antagonism toward it and say, I don't want to be tethered to the Jewish law and be a victim of the Jewish law and not enjoy the freedom that I have apart from the Jewish law, all Pauline rubbish. The Torah is Yahweh's. Every place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Yahweh identifies the Torah as being his. He never once calls it the Jewish Torah. Never once. The Torah is his. It's his guidance, his teaching. If you don't want to benefit from God's teaching, his direction, his guidance, then ignore the Torah. Do exactly as Paul told you to do. And then you will be able to live your life unaffected by God's guidance. He gave you the liberty to do that. Paul wrote that, and Christians believe that the Torah is a flawed document, that it hasn't the capacity to save, that it was a cruel taskmaster, it was of the flesh, it enslaved. God's position is the antithesis of that. Yahweh's Torah is holy, complete, and entirely perfect, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. There is only one way to return to God. There's only one way to restore the relationship with God. There's only one way to be transformed from physical to eternal, to becoming like light. There's only one way to have one's soul renewed, and that's by observing the Torah, by acting upon the Torah, by reciting the Torah. Yahweh's Torah is wholly complete and entirely perfect, tamim, without defect, lacking nothing, totally correct, genuine, right, helpful, healing, beneficial, and true, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. And the single most important aspect of all of this isn't just that it's Yahweh's Torah, not the Jewish Torah. It's not just that the Torah is perfect. It's not just that God says to said to Abraham, as the third requirement of the covenant, walk to me and become perfect, and therefore you know what needs to guide your steps if you wish to benefit from this process of becoming perfect. It's not just that the Torah is responsible for restoring and transforming our souls. It's not just that the soul is the object of the Torah's outreach, the Torah's guidance is for our souls, which is that part of us that will enter eternity, not our physical bodies. All those things are important. But the single most important thing here is what Torah means. It does not mean law. Torah is the source of teaching and instruction and the place from which direction and guidance flow. The moment you understand what the Torah is, then you are in a proper place to respond to it. The Torah is Yahweh's testimony. He says that here. Yahweh's testimony, his enduring witness, is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple for the open-minded.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that